There's a boat that's leaving soon for New York.
Come. David Sedaris continues his Visitor's Guide to New York City, a weekly feature this month on Morning Edition.
When I first announced my plans to move to New York, my father voiced his encouragement, saying, "Those animals are gonna skin you alive, and you heard it here first." I knew people who had lived here for years, but according to my father, they had survived only because they were tall. "Someone could knock you over the head without even raising their hand. You're the perfect target, Pee-wee." The summer before moving, I spent a month with my father in Raleigh, North Carolina. His campaign escalated, and he began buying the New York Times, scanning the paper for reports of brutal and freakish murders. I'd go to bed and wake to find a pile of clippings on my dresser. "Two killed by handheld cannon," or "Small man dies when ewes toss anchor off roof." "Get ready, Chief," he wrote in the margins. "It's just a matter of time until you get mugged, and then we'll see." I reminded him that I already had been mugged, but apparently it didn't count as the incident had taken place in downtown Raleigh. "That was a practice mug," he said. "It was a love tap compared to what's waiting for you in New York." My so-called love tap had taken place years earlier, when three men insisted I give them a cigarette. It's a small thing, a cigarette, and I might have handed one over had they asked rather than demanded. Looking back, it was probably unwise of me to say, "I think someone needs to stick a please on the end of that sentence." Two of the men grabbed me by the shoulders while the third spat in my face, calling me a snake and a fathead. I hadn't been physically harmed, but still the incident haunted me for months. Here I prided myself on my powers of observation, and when asked to describe these men, all I could say was that they were mean-looking, with eyes and foreheads. I took to carefully studying everyone I came across, memorizing their features on the off chance they might do me harm. "That's her, the one with the oxygen tank." Despite my father's warning, I moved to New York, where I find myself feeling much more safe than I had anywhere else, mainly because, day and night, there are always people around. It's ridiculous to think that these strangers might come to my aid during an emergency, but it's one of those fantasies that makes life just a little bit easier. And things do happen, but not nearly as often as I'd been led to believe. Most of these crimes are random and senseless. A woman is beaten after asking a group of teenagers where they bought their earrings. A retired choreographer is robbed of the three cantaloupes weighing down his knapsack. These things could happen to anyone, but I'm always left searching for a reason it happened to them instead of me. I tell myself that I would never ask a 15-year-old girl about her earrings, much less court disaster by purchasing more than one cantaloupe at a time. Sympathy is corrupted, and you find yourself living with a constant, low-level sense of wariness and suspicion. It's not like a toothache so much as a minor infection, something you carry around without even noticing it. When I first arrived in New York, the streets of my West Village neighborhood were quiet and often deserted, especially at night. One evening I was walking home and found myself trailing behind a pregnant woman carrying two shopping bags. She crossed Hudson Street and I followed behind her, past the loading docks and onto a lonely stretch of Morton Street, where she quickened her pace and nervously glanced behind her. Her hands trembled as she unlocked the front door of the building I myself had recently moved into. I caught the door with my foot and followed her to the second floor, where she dropped her groceries and raced to her apartment, scrambling to close what sounded like 15 deadbolt locks. I would have said something to reassure her, but it never registered that someone might be frightened of me. I soon learned that when walking behind a woman after dark, it's best to either cross a street or whistle something from Gypsy, just to let her know I'm a homosexual. New York has been very good to me. Like most everyone else, I've learned to live by a set of rules which I like to think protect me from unwanted danger. As a public service to potential visitors, I offer my list. Never step into an empty subway car. Never wear a Walkman. Stop for no one under the age of 80 years old. Look poor and maintain a lousy haircut. Refrain from walking home after 8 beers. Avoid men brandishing weapons. Do not, under any circumstances, wear a crown on the streets. And keep my voice down when discussing my vulnerability. My father still sends me clippings and calls whenever some act of New York violence makes the national news broadcasts. If anything should happen to you, I want you to know that you can come back home, he says. I'll set you up in your old room until you get back on your feet. How does that sound? There is no greater incentive for remaining in one piece. I listen to his voice on the phone and examine my reflection in the dark kitchen window, swearing to be more careful.
Comments of David Sedaris, author of a book titled Naked. His guide to New York will be heard here every Monday for the next few weeks. It's produced at member station WBEZ by the staff of the program This American Life.